With all the chaos, upheaval, and uncertainty going on right now, this is a good time to examine and re-examine what you're thinking, what you would like to have in your life, as opposed to what you don't want to have in your life, and where your focus is with that. So that's what we're going to get into in the next hour.
If you can acknowledge that you have some degree of complicity with everything in your life that you don't like, which means that everything in your life that you don't like is a reflection of something that you believe inside you, and that in order to change that thing that you don't like in your life, you would have to change some belief, some thought form, some pattern inside of you in order to reflect, so the external world can reflect a different reality. And we all have the ability to do that. And so, you know, I would just say that if you're not paying attention to what you're paying attention to.
My guest is Jonathan Hammond. He's a teacher, energy healer, shamanic practitioner, and spiritual counselor. Now, he didn't start out as somebody who was familiar with the Hawaiian lifestyle, the Hawaiian spirituality. And somehow, the way we do things in this life is we stumble into something and all of a sudden find out that was our calling. I want you to start, because you were an actor. You've done all the stuff, Broadway, some television background, the whole nine yards. And then you flipped and went into energy healing, which you were trying to go into in more of a clandestine mode so people wouldn't think you were too woo. And I think I'm so darn tired of that word. So I'm glad we're getting rid of it eventually. And then from there, then the spirituality aspect blossomed. So I would love to hear your background, your story, and how this played out for you.
Yeah. So, I mean, I did my first play when I was four, and my parents, and I was, you know, I was always imitating things on television that had super active imagination. And I think my parents just thought it must be an actor. And so, I now kind of know that, like, what I was really doing was channeling. Because when you think of acting, what you're doing is you're learning the lines, you're learning the blocking, and then you hope for inspiration to come through.
Yeah.
And it was always the yearning for the inspiration coming through that always fueled my artistry in my life as an artist. I wasn't so much a fame-driven actor. I really it was more about telling stories and lifting people up or making people forget their problems or illuminating something in some way. And what I found in my career as an actor, despite relative success, was that I wasn't having the reach that I wanted to have, because I think the nature of show business. I had always had a very rich spiritual life since about my mid-20s. And I thought when I started working with meditation and that kind of stuff, I thought it was just kind of traverse the difficulties of show business. That is like a coping mechanism, but it just kept taking up more and more and more space in my life. And then I had a series of events, some of which I write about in the book, in Hawaii and elsewhere around the world, because I was really doing a dual life where I was in this life that made sense and that I'd gone to school for. And then there was this other, you know, as you said, this kind of clandestine calling that was always right next to it, and I couldn't marry the two. And then there was a certain point where I had a real, I can only describe it as a visitation with something on the volcano in Maui, and that opened something up. A visitation with spirit, with God, whatever you want to call it. And I received the message that it was time to hang up the tap shoes, so to speak, and I had already been in this life, but really do go into life as a spiritual teacher and a spiritual healer full time. And once I made the decision, and it really did happen on one day, I definitely went through an identity crisis, but the decision was made on one day based on something that happened in Hawaii. And that sort of set the course of events for what would be the next, almost 15 years of my life, which was, as I said, as a spiritual teacher and shamanic practitioner and spiritual counselor. And I just kind of never looked back. And just to say, when you feel this, when anyone feels this calling where you're called to do something that doesn't make sense to your family or to the long held values that you've had, but it still excites you anyway, even though it's scary, follow it because it really is. I think it's crazy in this culture that we teach 18-year-olds to figure out what they're supposed to do, take out hundreds of thousands of dollars of student loans, and that's what they're going to do for the rest of their life. And that's just not the way life really is. and something else develops in me. And so I just, I really encourage everyone, if you're feeling a call, particularly at this time on the planet, this is such a transformational time. If you're feeling that call, to follow it, because there's something there that's really real.
And the book is The Shaman's Mind, The Huna Wisdom to Change Your Life. Jonathan Hammond is the author. Okay, I want to go back to, I also have the little book, that little pink booklet from Serge King. I ordered that maybe 20 years ago, however long I've had that. And so he's one of the people that you have listed as recommend for your book. And I thought, well, what was your connect with him?
Serge Healy King was, is my teacher, and this is after many years studying with different shamanic cultures. I've worked with shamans directly on three different continents. It was that experiences that I kept having in Hawaii that kept bringing me back to something about Hawaii, and then I began to dig into the culture and the spiritual heritage and the shamanic lineages of Hawaii, and that got me in touch with Serge Healy King. Who, when I met, I think he was around 80, and I began a course of study with him with Aloha International, and everything that he taught. In fact, I dedicated The Shaman's Mind to him. The book is dedicated to him, even though I don't think he would agree with all of this, to be honest. But that's okay. that's okay. You differ from your teachers. That's the nature of it. That began a 2-year study with him. And what I learned in the Hawaiian tradition was a culmination of what I was learning in all of these different cultures that I had worked with, and all these different shamanic lineages and Reiki and energy healing, and it all culminated in a philosophy called Huna, which was something that it made me aware that if you follow this philosophy, and it's a very simple philosophy, much of which you've heard variations of before, that you actually, and integrate it, you actually enter into how shamans cross-culturally think, how they view the world, what their worldview is, how they think about energy, how they think about the nature of their own power, the nature of their own thoughts. And what I found in this Hawaiian philosophy was a universal paradigm about how shamans tend to think. And having observed shamans, like I said, on three different continents, I found something that was related to all of them. And even in all my shamanic travels, I kept seeing that they were all kind of doing the same thing. There would be different traditions, different practices, different cultural paradigms, but all the shamans that I worked with were all sort of doing the same thing. And I found that culminated in this philosophy. And I was so excited about it because it's such a simple philosophy, although so deep when you get into it, that I wanted to teach it to others, because it made me realize that we can all learn to think as the shamans do, to enter into the magical thinking of the shaman.
This book is so easy to follow. You've done a wonderful job of making it accessible. And I understand there are traditional ways of sharing medicine and sharing power and sharing insight. The walls seem to have come down in recent years, and I'm talking very recent, maybe the past 5 years, where people are sharing the Hopi. They're putting their wisdom out to a wider audience, saying now is the time to us to bring our best self forward. And with your abilities at transducing this information from multiple cultures and backgrounds, because I also saw that you were, in addition to the Reiki, that you also had a background in the Cherokee bodywork, I believe.
Yep, I do.
So all of this have, and you know, not growing up in any of those cultures, at the same time though, appreciating and loving and bringing those cultures forward in a way that I believe makes them accessible to a wider group. And sometimes that's what it takes.
That's absolutely right. The thing, it's a limitless universe, which means the separation is merely an illusion. That is one of the foundational principles in Huna. And what that is really getting at is that there's only one mind. And we have access to, and human beings are tuned into the same consciousness. And while I'm very, very sensitive to cultural appropriation, this is a time on the planet where we have to come together as a global village. And what I have found as an interfaith minister, as a shamanic practitioner, having worked with all these different cultures, is that everyone, that truth is truth, righteousness is righteousness, humility is humility, love is love, healing is healing anywhere. And what I'm finding is that this is a time on the planet where those walls have to come down. Having worked with shamans on three different continents, I have never been taught something by them where they say, I'm teaching you this, but make sure you don't share it with anyone. Yeah. I've never had that experience.
Yeah.
And so I think that we have to be careful about not being too precious, but acknowledge where it came from. You know, absolutely. And in fact, a part of the proceeds of my book go to the Hawaii Wildlife Fund, just so I'm paying back to the land where this information came from. But it's so important that we recognize that this is a global effort now, a time on the planet, a huge ascension and shift in consciousness that has to happen. And it's difficult and it's scary and it's tumultuous, but it is happening. And it has been prophesied by so many indigenous cultures about this time on the planet, that it would be this kind of very dark time, but that we would get to the other side of it. And it was because of the light workers, the light bearers, the healers, the people who want to live in right relationship with the earth, who shepherd in that new way of being. And so all this esoteric wisdom that is now widely available to us is for those people who are shepherding in that new consciousness. And that's why it's so important that we honor. We have to think the spiritual intelligences of the universe know what they're doing. And the fact that all of this esoteric wisdom is available to us has happened for a reason. And it's important that we honor that and not get too precious with it. And again, cultural appropriation is so important and important to acknowledge. But it is about, it's for us. It's for us. It's for us continuing on this planet.
The book is The Shaman's Mind. Jonathan Hammond is my guest. Backtracking a little bit, a meeting with a totem animal. I posted on Facebook just the day before we met, spoke, this picture of a man walking a giant tortoise across an intersection in a metro area. And this tortoise, I mean, this is one of those, you know, 200, 300 pound gigantuous things and a being. And I've had my own turtle as a pet. He was a wonderful, a beautiful soul. And you looked at him and he looked right back at you. He had character. He had essence. He had soul and wisdom. You have a turtle as your totem. And you say, you don't always have, you know, you're not supposed to mention that. Well, I have a totem animal as well. It's not a turtle, but I wanted to talk with you about, okay, how did you meet your turtle and how did this, because this is part of the shamanic element that connects us to a larger world.
Yeah, well, in shamanism, we revere nature, we worship nature, and the idea, and we think of nature as a sentient being, and all aspects of nature as having a consciousness. So everything from a Huna perspective and from a shamanic perspective is alive, conscious, and can relate to our thoughts. And Huna takes it a step further and says everything wants to relate to our thoughts. So these beings in nature that make contact with us, they do so for a reason, and they have medicine for us. So many years ago, I was in Belize, of all places, and I had a dream. And the dream was just this giant turtle that just swam with me and communed with me. And I woke up, and turtle was all of a sudden on my radar. The next day, I was doing a snorkeling trip, and I came face-to-face with a turtle, and we had a stare-down. Literally the next day, and that preceded this love affair, both in my consciousness and in the real world. Because if there's a turtle on a billboard, if there's a turtle structure, if there's a turtle that's carved by the elements in stone, I will find it. It's just that they follow me around, and I had many experiences with turtle certainly in Hawaii. And, you know, and turtle represents Mother Earth.
Yes.
You know, turtle is an ancient being and a loving being. And there's a sense with turtle of that wherever you go, you're home. And that there's so much wisdom in that medicine. And so that was something that I came across that has just become so, and when you think of an animal ally, it's like, it's the spirit of the animal, mm-hmm. and it's a sense of that they're your buddy. They're a spirit guide. They're even a guardian angel for you. That's how I tend to think of them.
Well,
so, yeah,
I think
turtle it, is yeah.
In the book, when you're talking about the experience you had in Hawaii, the rock formation where you lay down on the blanket, the towel, and then you turn around, you take a picture, and you can see the turtle face. It's just, that is absolutely brilliant.
It was absolutely crazy. I mean, I talked about that visitation experience I had that changed my life. and I was laying down because I couldn't sit up. I was actually laying down in the lava rock and having this experience. And then when it was over with, I took my cell phone out and I just took pictures all around my head because I hadn't begun to process this deep communion I was having with spirit, but I knew that I wanted to remember the place that I was in. And when I got back to the hotel that I was staying in, I looked at the pictures, and right next to my head, and there's a picture of it in the book, is a turtle face. I mean, it is unmistakable, smiling at me, literally right next to my head. And and at that point, turtle had been around for many, many, many years. So it was shocking, but it also wasn't surprising.
I just think it's hilarious because there it is, like he was whispering, or she, the being was whispering in your ear. And if you hadn't taken those pictures to get the panoramic view, you might have missed that huge, huge billboard that said, "Can you see me now?" Ha 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 ha.
That's right. You know, and if you just say, you know, the first principle of Huna says the world is what you think it is. The world is what you think it is, which means that if you go into nature with the idea that nature is going to speak to you, is going to communicate with you, is going to offer you advice, that's exactly what nature will do. Similarly, if you don't, if you just think a walk in the forest is a nice walk in the forest, you won't have that experience. But if you open yourself to the fact that we're not only connected in one mind, there's only one organism. We're all a singular aperture through which the oneness sees itself. So we're not separate from anything. We are all part of one organism. And so that means that when you take a walk in the forest, you're taking a walk just through another part of you, and that part of you can speak to you.
What I hate to do is skip around because there's so much wisdom in this book, and the cosmology of the Hawaiian spirituality is important. And I want to get to the three selves. So can you take me through the other and to the three selves? I'm kind of skipping ahead, but there's
okay.
Just take me through the cosmology and the words, the language, because that's also, those are key.
Sure. So essentially, we all know there are all kinds of ways to divide the self. The simplest way to do it is by three: body, mind, and spirit. And from a Huna perspective, and actually cross culturally, in many of the indigenous cultures, they all, the Lakota, the Cherokee, the Orisha of Africa, the Shuar in South America, they all talk about three selves or three souls. So you have the conscious mind, which in the Hawaiian tradition is called Lono. You have the body mind, which is the unconscious mind. So you're not consciously beating your heart. There's something doing that. That's the unconscious body mind that keeps you alive and that also stores memory. And then you have your spiritual self, which is your higher self. And the easiest way to understand your higher self is that anytime you feel a sense of inspiration, anytime you feel a sense of, I want to reach towards that potential, or anytime you appreciate beauty, certainly pray or anything like that, you're making communion with your spiritual self. And that's called kane. The unconscious mind is called ku. And in Huna, what we do is we learn to synthesize those three selves. And it begins with a choice in the unconscious mind to actually address that which is in our unconscious mind. Because when you think about our problems, the patterns that where we're stuck, the low self-esteem, the addictions, the bad behaviors, all of those things, those are lodged in the body. Those are unconscious patterns that we usually learn to do in childhood, or we learned about ourselves in childhood. So the conscious mind makes a choice to change the material in the unconscious mind, because you become aware of it. You say, I see this pattern. I see this self-loathing. I see this self-hatred. I see this, I don't look right. I see this sense of, I learned that money's a problem from mom and dad. And so money lives in me as a problem. And the conscious mind makes a choice to actually address that unconscious pattern, change it. And in doing so, spirit then recognizes that it has a different person to work with. So we create a vessel down here through our minds and through what we're holding in our body and holding in our unconscious mind that puts us in sympathetic vibration or harmonic resonance with the divine. And the more that we're extending love to ourselves, consciously extending love to ourselves, the more that we're actually in that sympathetic vibration with the divine, because the divine is only love. And so when you see those memes on Facebook that say, "Did you remember to love yourself today?" That isn't something cute. That's actually a spiritual directive that if you would actually do it, if you would actually extend love to yourself, because the parts of you that are hurt, that are constricted, that feel badly about themselves, those were all born of unlove. And so to give love to those parts of you is to then invite in the gift of the divine to bring this new reality into being and to heal those parts of you. So we align our conscious mind, the unconscious mind, and then spirit just follows our lead and brings us whatever it is that we create. So that's a very simplistic explanation, but that's what we're doing in the three selves. We don't know that we're as divided as we are. Jung talked about the persona and the shadow, you know, the sense of what we present to the world and that which is hidden and underneath. And we have to excavate what is hidden and underneath, because that actually has been around longer, because we usually learned it in childhood. Mm-hmm. And that is what is running the show, unless it goes unattended to, that's what runs our show. And spirit can only work with what it is that we're believing and creating and how we feel about ourselves. So I often give the example, if you're a woman over 35 and you have a belief, a deep-seated belief, because mom told you that all women over 35 end up alone, that, and you get to 35 and that is what you are sending out into the world, because that you believe that is an unconscious belief that is deep inside you. Spirit would love to stick the guy next to you on the subway, but spirit just says, "I don't have anything to work with. If I center the guy, she wouldn't even be looking for him anyway." You know.
Yeah.
So this is how it's so our beliefs, what we hold in our bodies, what we hold as our reality, indicate to spirit what we can receive.
There are many ways to do a shamanic journey. One of the things you do is provide that in the book, and this is unifying the three selves, the shamanic journey to Kanehuma, and I think it's Kanehuna Moko. I'm hopeful I'm pronouncing that halfway close. But Jonathan Hammond is the instructor, and you teach with the Omega Institute. I mean, this is something that once you dedicated yourself, you build up quite a track record, and there are a lot of people who I think have benefited from your work and continue to discover you as a resource for this kind of work. Spiritual work, metaphysical work, karmic work, whatever you want to call it. And one of the things that's important in any kind of shamanic work is the journeying. And you set a really, I think, a very nice example of how this can flow with the writing that you include in the chapter Working with the Three Selves.
Yeah, so a shamanic journey is simply, when you think about what a shaman does, the shaman is simply accessing those parts of reality that are not consensus reality. So there's a lot that's happening underneath the surface. There are different worlds that we can enter, different frequencies, and the shaman consciously goes into those realms to access power, to work with spirit. That's essentially what a shamanic journey is. And while that seems sort of highfalutin, it's very simple. We did this as children. We went into a conscious daydream. And in doing so, using our imagination, created and came into contact with these alternative realities and with these, quote, imaginary friends, which we might call spirits or spirit guides. And so in a shamanic journey, what we're doing is they're very simple to do, but we're consciously entering into a daydream for healing. So in the, a lot of people are not sure about that high self, that higher self. What is that? Is that when I'm being my most behaved and my most good? You know, and it's not that at all. And so I bring you into a journey, and there's all kinds of ways to reach the higher self. This is just a one way to do it.
Yeah.
Kane Hunamoko. Kane is the higher self. That's the word in Hawaiian. And then Hunamoku is the secret island. So it's our higher self's secret island. So we journey to that fantastical place in order to meet our higher self, learn about our higher self, our highest potential, what our highest potential is, what's available to us. You know, I often think when we talk about the higher self, imagine who you are at your most realized, make it twice as good, and you'll be in the ballpark.
Yeah.
That's the higher self.
aim high.
Aim high. And so that's what we're doing on that journey. But there's all kinds of ways to, that's just one specific journey in the book, but there are all kinds of ways to do a journey. And it's just, you can even think of it as simple as just getting very quiet with yourself, going into a beautiful imagined place in nature, and asking for healing, asking to meet a guide, asking advice on something that's going on in your life. And if you just allow yourself to relax into it, something will happen. Something will always happen. You'll sense something. You'll hear something. You might see it. You might just have a feeling. It might be that it's not quite clear, but then it becomes clear a week later when something else happens in your life, things get clarified. But you're just entering into that underneath reality place where the shaman accesses all of this wisdom and information and healing.
You also talk in the book that you save it for the last, the Ho'oponopono. And you know, people have heard that word, and still there's a learning curve of how do you access this? What is it about? And how do you implement it in your life?
Yeah, Ho'oponopono is it's a Hawaiian healing practice, and it is about the alignment of those three selves through love. The easiest way to understand it is that conscious mind sends love to that inner child. It's usually contemporary Ho'oponopono uses four phrases: "I love you," "I'm sorry," "Please forgive me," "Thank you." And I go into the book. I go into great detail about what those phrases actually mean, who you're talking to, why you're saying them, and all of that. But the conscious mind extends the love to the inner child who learns that they are something other than divine and perfect and whole and lovable and worthy. And so the conscious mind extends love to that inner child. In the face of that love, that inner child begins to recalibrate their identity and learn that they are deserving and lovable and worthwhile, and it shifts something in terms of our sense of self. And in extending that love, then the higher self, which has direct access to the divine, says to the divine, "We got some healing going on down here. Let's bring them divine love." And then what the Hawaiians call the Mauna Loa, the highest power or the divine power, comes down into us and brings us healing. So that's a really simplistic way of explaining Ho'oponopono. It's very deep, and it's not just the individual practice of Ho'oponopono. Ho'oponopono is a lifestyle. It's about that we are always in this loving relationship with ourselves and with the wounds that we carry, and we're extending loving attention to them over and over and over again, which puts us in alignment with the divine. And so every action you take, every thought you think, every person that you invite in your life, if you make those choices based on the idea, is love's perspective present? Is aloha here? When you make choices based on love being present, you usher in divine influence to help co-create a life that is in alignment with your highest potential.
What it does is set you up for the final chapter where you say, I had one more element to add to this book, another chapter. And so there you are in Hawaii. And this is a beautiful way to bring everything all back together in that circle of the inner child.
Yeah. I've been writing the book for, at that point, about a year and a half. And I've been lucky. I'm able to go to Hawaii a lot. But I live in New York City, although I just bought a condo in Maui. I'm moving next year, which I'm very thrilled about. I had almost finished the book, and I went back, and I hadn't been there. And I think having written the book for a year and a half and so connecting with the islands and this wisdom in my mind, when I reached a beach that I had been to hundreds of times, I saw it differently, and I saw the landscape differently, and I realized that the reason why I was here really was not because I'm clever, not because I can afford it, not because I wrote a book on Hawaii, but because I have been taking care of this little boy, and the last thing on this little boy's radar is that he would ever have gotten Hawaii. And so the culmination of the book is really about that I'm here because of loving this part of me that has been so hurt. You know, I'll tell my clients, I'm a healer because I need so much healing.
Yeah.
Not, you know, and because it's co-creative. What you heal in the other, you heal in yourself. And so the intention or the aspiration of the book is that everyone, through loving yourself, through monitoring the thoughts you think, the actions you take, the people you invite in your life, through loving yourself, you invite in your own version of Hawaii, your own Hawaii, and you create a life that is as sumptuous as that paradise. And we all have the ability, with literally our thoughts, to do that.
What I want to come back to, first, I do want to mention that jonathanhammond.com, the website, shamanic healing, spiritual and intuitive counseling, chakra balancing, weddings on Maui. I think the next go round is going to be in the fall of 2021. Wow. Breath work, men's work. Okay. It's all there on your website. What's your favorite? Now that you're moving to Maui, maybe we've already answered that.
I don't think I have a favorite modality. But I do crave. You know, healing is like a real thing. Like healing actually happens. Like people really do get better. You know, I just had a client the other day, and it was the first time client. She presented her story, and I sort of told her what I thought we were going to do together. And she said, "Am I a lost cause? You know, is this can this happen? You know?" And I said to her, "If it didn't, I'd be so depressed." It really does happen. And so I think more than anything else, it's just that when I see the light bulb go off, when I see people actually make the changes, and when I see people actually value themselves in a different way, take up more space in their life, know that they matter more, know that their feelings matter more, know that it doesn't matter what anyone thinks. And when you can organically come to that for yourself, it shifts how you walk through the world, and the world becomes your world. And I crave that for everyone. So it's in my private practice, that more than anything else, that's what I do. I have all these different modalities, but it's all to just get us there.
I want you to go back. You had a bunch of psychics who were sharing your office. And at this point, you had been very quiet about what you were doing in Hawaii, hadn't told anybody. And somebody called you up on the phone and said, "What's with Hawaii?" And okay, so what happened with that?
Well, it's really based on the third principle of Huna. Third principle of Huna says that energy flows where attention goes. So what that means is where we put our focus and attention elicits the creative energies of the universe to bring to us the nearest physical equivalent of whatever we're placing our focus and attention on. And I had been putting so much focus and attention on Hawaii that I was allowing a group of psychics to work in my office on Friday nights because they just did a group and they rented it out. And I wasn't at the group. And the head facilitator sent me a text message one night after they had all met. And he said, "What's going on with Hawaii?" And I had not told anyone in this group. This group barely even knew me about anything Hawaiian. He said, "Well, all the psychics were getting all these Hawaiian gods and goddesses, and they were all on their phone Googling them because they had never seen them before, and they seem to be they have been Hawaiian. What's going on?" And this is true. My hand on a stack of Bibles, true. At the moment that I got this text message, I was laying down in my apartment reading a book on Hawaiian spirituality. That is absolutely true.
Yeah.
And it was just so crazy. But because energy flows where attention goes, and I put so much attention and focus on Hawaii, I had created an energetic current to the island 5,000 miles away that was finding itself in my workspace.
See, that's the magic element. And there are people who go to Hawaii and have these experiences. And I like the one that you share when you do your shamanic journeying, and you and your partner also had an experience. The two of you were in this space, each in his own way, connecting to this other source. And I think that had to be transformative just in itself, that not only did you have it, but someone who was with you also shared an anomaly that we don't usually talk about we don't usually have the words for it, but to know that that can happen so easily when you go into a place of that kind of, with that kind of spirit power.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Hawaii sits on a spiritual vortex. In fact, there used to be a huge landmass where Hawaii now stands, much bigger than Hawaii, called Mu, the continent of Mu, M-U, non-Hawaiians called Lemuria. And during before cataclysmic changes in the earth, this was a place of deep spiritual richness. And it's been theorized that either this was the recipient of spiritual influences from across the world, or the source of all the esoteric wisdom out to the world. And it hasn't been decided which one it is, but you feel that mana, that power, that spiritual power, when you go to the island. If you're looking for it, if you just want to have a beach vacation, you can do that too. But if you're looking for it, the land itself is really infused with spirit and with the sense that it has been a spiritual vortex for millennia. There are some people who talk about the certain places on the earth being chakras, and Hawaii being the heart chakra of the earth. You know, we all have chakras, and because we're only a microcosm of the macrocosm, that means that the earth has chakras too. And so Hawaii is a real vortex for that. So yes, it's really possible. I often actually Serge jokes about that there are a lot of born again Hawaiians, because the people who get it, they really get it, and they, you know, that's holy land for them. You know, and just to say, if it's not holy land for you, it doesn't matter. You will find a place geographically that might be. But the point in writing the book is about that this sort of magical existence of synchronicity and of a sense that you're working with energy, and that your thoughts create reality, and that energy flows where attention goes, and that love can infuse everything in your life. This is a reality that you can create anywhere. What I love about Hawaii is that when you're just there, you feel it all.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Okay. That's the one thing you said, you could take Hawaii with you wherever you go. Okay. So, and then you're moving.
I'm moving. Yeah. It's you know, like I think, you know, I think that the COVID-19 is a very specific medicine. I think of COVID-19 as a spirit. I know a lot of people think of it as a virus. I think of it as a spirit, because I think whether or not it's affecting you physically or not, it's affecting you.
Yeah.
And more than anything else, it's causing those of us who are really supposed to wake up to be those light workers on the planet, to shepherd in the new way. We're all being woken up, and COVID-19 helps us get to go inward, look at what it is that we have to look at, fortify, strengthen, build our courageousness, so that when we really can go outside again and the new normal starts, we know our place. And so I feel like this is a time when so many people, including myself, have really been making this deep recalibration with, am I in the job I want? Am I in the city that I want? Am I in the friendships that I want? What's important to me? And it just got really clear to me over, I mean, I thought Hawaii was much farther away for me, just in terms of time, but it just got really clear since March that no, it's time. And I think if I'm going to stay on brand, you know, then I really have to, you know, I have to, you know, deep into my own courageousness and make some big choices for myself and know that's home and that's where I'm supposed to go.
Well, I'm going to offer you my condolences in advance. I really am sorry that you have to move to Hawaii and that is where your spirit is calling you. Okay.
I know. It's very sad.
Oh.
It's very sad.
Oh, many tears will be shed. Yes, they will. And you're jumping for joy as you shed them. Again, Jonathan Hammond, my guest. If you want to go to Hawaii, you feel like getting married just for the heck of it, or, you know, re-cementing your vows or whatever, one way or the other, you have to have an excuse to go to Hawaii. This is your person, all right? JonathanHammond.com. Read the book before you go so you can know what the shaman's mind is all about, and maybe the huna won't surprise you. Then again, it's always a surprise, so enjoy it. This is the magical element that comes into this. You talked about that essence, that it, that you were in contact with. Did that surprise you? I mean, was this something that was like the last thing you thought could possibly happen?
No, it's not. I think that, you know, I've been very lucky in that, when I was an actor, and you, a lot of times when you're an actor and you do theater, you have to do like a school matinee. And all the other actors, and it's usually at 10 a.m., and all the other actors hated the 10 a.m. show. And I secretly loved them. And the kids always ate me up. And everyone always was like, why do the kids love you so much? And it's because I'm so kid-like. And, you know, when you think of shamanism, well, what are we doing? We're playing with imaginary friends. We're working with drums and ringing bells and imagining peripheral universes. And there's something so childlike about it. And I was very lucky in that I did always have this big imagination. And I always had this sense of, you know what, if someone wrote a book that's 200 pages, that's about something that I don't have a relationship to it, I'm just going to kind of believe them because they must be onto something that I'm not. So mm-hmm. I think skepticism kills.
Yes.
Our spiritual life.
Yes.
I think, you know, and I just never really had that. And so I've just always really been open to experience it. And when I came to shamanism, it just was so clear that what it was really getting at is that plant wants to communicate with you. That waterfall is reflecting something about you. There's a picture in those clouds that actually are containing information for you. And I just began, and I'm not special. But I am willing. I am willing.
Well,
and so I think that there was something that I was just very open to having those experiences. So it actually wasn't a big surprise. I mean, it's always a big deal when it happens,
yeah.
And you can't ask it to happen. But like, I can't say I was totally surprised.
Well, and you say, you know, earlier as a child that you had some experiences and you were always curious and in working in your own way on spirituality. So it wasn't like that came out of the blue. It was a part of you. I just know that those experiences were very powerful to incorporate you on a higher path and take you to a place where now you're moving to Maui.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And again, just really encouraging you know, it's so important that I just say this out loud. I'm not special. We all have these abilities within us. We've just been socialized away from them. And we've all been asked to assimilate to a scientific, mechanical reality only. Not that there is anything wrong with technology and science. They're wonderful things. But we've been asked to assimilate, to fit in. And to live a spiritual life is to be singular. To follow your own inner directives, your own, we're wired for our truth. We're wired to feel our truth, but we're socialized to pull away from our truth and assimilate with the other. And when we do that, we pull away from the most special parts of us. And so it's so important that everyone take the wisdom in my book or whatever esoteric wisdom speaks to you and filter it through you and work that program for you. Whatever it is, you know, the more that I do spiritual work, the more I can say that all roads lead to Rome, whether or not it's Hawaii, whether or not it's shamanism, whether or not it's Buddhism, whether or not it's certain aspects of certain religions. It's all really coming towards the one love, the oneness, the fact that we are all interconnected. And so the more that you begin to organize yourself and organize your life based on your own reality, the more you'll enter into what is supposed to be your path, and the more you'll find what is the journey of your soul, the singular journey of your soul.
Going back into your shamanic journey, and I think I will share with you, I did the practice because I wanted to see how it played out this time. It's always different. I wanted to go and see who might appear. And my power animal, of course, is there. And instead of being a regular horse, it flies. So we go to the island. And when I get to the island, I met the being. The being wasn't a person and it wasn't somebody else. It was a very, very large insect being. And I've had this little joke before. One time I had an insect show up and he's an ant. And I said, well, why are you here as the ant? He said, because the bearded old man's been overdone. So
I love it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So yeah, mine have a sense of humor. Okay. So with that, I wanted you to share, you work with clients and you, like you had mentioned one before, there's also one in the book, but when they come into you and you first start trying to engage them with what is holding you back, where inside you is the stopper? How do you get someone who's listening right now who may not feel there's still that skepticism and that is a killer. That's a stopper. How do you turn that around into why do you need to listen to that?
Well, because it's not creating the life that you want, you know. So if you just look at your life, you don't even need to go to a therapist to do this. Just look at your life and the things that you don't like in your life. If you can acknowledge that you have some degree of complicity with everything in your life that you don't like, which means that everything in your life that you don't like is a reflection of something that you believe inside you, and that in order to change that thing that you don't like in your life, you would have to change some belief, some thought form, some pattern inside of you in order to reflect, so the external world can reflect a different reality. And we all have the ability to do that. And so, you know, I would just say that if you're not paying attention to what you're paying attention to, you are unaware of the energetic blueprints that are being created, that are where you are co-creating reality based on where you're placing your attention, what you're thinking about, what you're habitually thinking. And if that's true, if we co-create with our thoughts, then it's probably a pretty good idea to dwell on the positive polarity, to dwell on expansive mind state, to have a large sense of self, because all of those things are creating your world. And so it does require that we take responsibility for the things that we've created in our lives that we don't want. The Huna wisdom is about taking 100% responsibility with the notion that we are creating our reality with what is going on inside us. And that's why it's so important to look at that stuff.
Well, and part of it is, like you said earlier, aim high. Whatever you want, picture the best possible outcome twice as good. And I think that's where this comes into play, is that sometimes people haven't always been thinking that way. And so how do they set that vision board of this is where I would like to be, with confidence, with belief, with assurance? Where does that assurance come from?
Yeah. So think about reality as like a blank canvas, and onto that reality, we project our thoughts, our beliefs, our inner world. And that blank canvas shifts and changes based on what we're projecting on it. And because the pervasive projection onto reality has been one of, at this time on the planet, negativity, fear, separation, hatred, profits over people, dominion over nature, the isms of all kinds. Because that is what has been projected on that canvas of reality, reality has shifted and literally become sick. And so if you think about the idea that you have played a part in that ill reality, and you just cleaning up your own mess, you just working on yourself, because you are not separate from that reality, affects that reality. And so Serge Kahili King said something that blew my mind that I still think about. He said, if you want to heal someone or you want to heal the world, think of them and you feel good.
Yeah.
Because we are not separate from anything. And so we can eat, even in the face of all the difficulties that are going on the planet right now, you just have to do your part. And doing your part, you don't even have to leave your house to do your part, as long as you're working on you.
Well, you talk about it in the book, and that would be blessing what you want. In other words, even though this is the flower might be a little sick, might be a little more water, maybe, you know, a few leaves are missing, you bless it as you attend to it and see it as recovering, see it as becoming fruitful, as becoming beautiful, gorgeous. And it may be that plant will die, but it has a little sprout that comes up, and the next version of that plant is healthy and vibrant. And so if we look at our planet right now that way, of yes, we're going to see some dead leaves. Okay, that's a part of regeneration that happens with everything. But we have to let that pass, knowing that what we are giving into it is fertilizer in some way, shape, or form. Good fertilizer, not just a bunch of pile of, you know, okay?
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. And just to say, you know, the thing that, you know, so bless the things that are working. Bless the people who are trying to get your people in office. Bless those people, and don't pay any attention to the ones that you don't want. that's what, so blessing what you want is, the idea behind that is that when you see someone or something that has what you want, rather than recoil from it and other yourself from it by being jealous, by hating it, by something like that, actually bless it. And that puts you into energetic alignment with the thing that you don't currently have, but that you want.
Yeah.
So if you want a better, you know, if you want a better body, you bless the people at the gym that have the body you want. You want more money, you bless the people who are where they are in their careers that you want. And that puts you in, and so by extending that love and by complimenting, in a Hawaiian a thought, like complimenting is a real sense of like energy work. Complimenting and affirming and blessing, because that puts you in the energetic current of the thing that you're complimenting or blessing.
Yeah. Yeah. You're basically, you're resonating, it's coherence. And so you're going,
that's right.
And you're in flow with that energy, which is reflecting back to you. And then it compounds for you to develop an even greater, I think, sympathy or empathy or vision, because you've got the pattern. It wasn't there before. And then you see something you love or you like, or you're possibly jealous of, and say, no, I'm not jealous. This is how I am. This is a part of me. And this is how I wish to develop further to incorporate that essence as mine as well. I'm trying to get you to say things so that anybody who listening to this right now has the ability to sit down, whether they've read the book or not, and really want to be a part of your training, The Shaman's Mind, Huna Wisdom to Change Your Life, that happens at the Omega Institute, because that's coming up in January of 2021. That's still on tap, isn't
yep.
it? Okay, so
yep, that's still happening. That's a virtual event. So,
yes.
So anyone can tune in, yeah.
Yeah, that's one of the benefits, I think, of this, is that we get to go to events that never, ever before would have been possible because they were not presented in this format. And I'm thinking, you know, I know people want to go in person, but sometimes you can't go to all these things in person. And this is a way of making your stuff more accessible to a global audience who I think would really appreciate having access to these kinds of philosophies that have been around for a long time. But you've really put it, I think, in an accessible form that makes sense, and somebody could sit right down and go through it right now and say, wow, I can start today.
Beautiful. I love it.
You talked about earlier sharing in the book with your partner. Did that change your life in any way? But with the partner who is a part of this, when you had your experiences, was it mirrored?
Yeah. Yes, it was. I mean, I think that it's important that we recognize that, you know, who we choose to spend our life with. You know, a good relationship is one where you say to someone, this is who I need to be today. And they say, what can I do to help?
Yeah.
And then when you fail tomorrow, they say, I thought you were going to do that. That's a good relationship. Because and that's one of the, there's another version of Ho'oponopono which has to do with cord cutting, mm-hmm. with energetically cord cutting. And when I learned it, it was taught that like that the teacher would even do this with their child. And the idea is, I see you clearly new every day, and as much as you need me to be your dad, you also need to be your own person. And so I am cutting the cord and I'm seeing you, because a child is different yesterday than they are today. And we are no different. And so to be in a relationship where there's a sense of fluidity and a sense of, I have room to grow. And that isn't a threat to you. And that's a reciprocal relationship. That's a relationship that will keep enduring.
There was a telling sentence in the book when you were saying, all of a sudden you had the insight that it wasn't Maui that you needed to go to. You know, you needed to go to a different island, and it was 6 weeks out, and you called your partner and said, okay.
Yep.
And he's like, and you say, well, he knows I do stuff like this.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I literally had a, that's right. I had a journey in my office, and we both love Maui. That's where we're moving. And I had a journey in my office, and the journey, and there was a Polynesian woman in my journey who's a spirit guide. And she said, you have to come to Maui you have to come to Kauai. And so I called, you know, I called up my partner and I said, well, we have to go to Kauai and we have to change the reservations. And he's totally used to me. And he said, why do you say that? I said, because I did this shamanic journey and that's what this Polynesian spirit guide told me that I should do. And that was exactly, you know, and we had formative experiences on our trip to Kauai. Yeah.
Yeah. I just wanted to include that because it's so powerful when you have a partner, a support system, somebody who's there and allows you to just be you, whether you sink or swim, you fly or you coast or you struggle, they're there and say, okay, that's who you are. Yep. Got that. You get to be you.
Yep. That's right. That's
okay.
Right. It's so important.
We're going to have to wrap. So is there anything you'd like to add that I might've overlooked?
The Shaman's Mind, Who Knows Wisdom to Change Your Life. You can get it on Amazon. You can reach me at jonathanhammond.com. Bring aloha into your life. If your mind is filled with aloha, your world will be too. That's not something cute. That's actually the truth. So invite that into your life and let go of anything that isn't love.
Thank you. I appreciate your time. I love your book. I love the way you've laid it out. It's very accessible, and I'm hoping other people will enjoy it as much as I do. So jonathanhammond.com is the connect. Thank you for listening, and thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you so much for having me. Aloha.